Don't you wish you'd written that? I do. I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky, and this is a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for Richard Strauss's tone poem, Death and Transfiguration. Conventional wisdom has it that the best art comes from personal experience. Go to any writing class and they'll tell you to write what you know about, and this is usually sound advice. In the case of Richard Strauss and his fantastic tone poem, Death and Transfiguration, nothing, and I mean nothing, could be further from the truth. The composer was all of 24 years old when he began the work and in excellent health. His middle-class life had been perfectly happy, and his boundless energy, ambition, and enthusiasm had landed him numerous excellent conducting positions. Strauss had already written his first masterpiece, the tone poem Don Juan, or as the English say, Don Juan, which made him the talk of Central Europe. Soon it would be the world. Suffice it to say, the idea behind Death and Transfiguration was a complete fiction dreamed up in the mind of the composer. If so, where did it come from? The answer is easy, but first, a few words about this extraordinary man, Richard Strauss. I'm sure you've all met this guy. Tall, distinguished-looking, good at just about everything, hardworking, and ambitious. There was literally nothing in music Richard Strauss couldn't do exceptionally well. He was a fine pianist, excellent conductor, and precocious composer. His father, Franz Strauss, was the first horn player in the Munich Court Orchestra, and he was determined that his brilliant son would embrace his personal musical tastes and tyrannies. Richard was fed a steady diet of Central European musical staples: Bach, Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven, Schubert, Schumann, Mendelssohn, and Brahms. In short, what Richard would have been taught had he gone to a conservatory. Note that conservatory and conservative have similar roots, and this is not by accident. Franz Strauss was a rabid musical conservative, and had there been a Fox Music Channel in 19th century Munich, he would have watched it daily and maybe even been a returning panelist. Rebellion was in the offing, and it was just a matter of time. At age 19, 1883, Strauss became the assistant conductor to Hans von Bülow at the Meiningen Court Orchestra. There he met the violinist and composer Alexander Ritter. Ritter was married to Wagner's niece and was a huge proponent of Wagner's music. He had a profound influence on Strauss and urged him to write Wagnerian-inspired operas and Liszt-influenced tone poems. Loosed of fatherly influence, Strauss immediately embraced what was known as the music of the future and was off to the races. After leaving Meiningen and with a short stop in Munich, Strauss even became an assistant conductor at Bayreuth the summer before completing Death and Transfiguration. Bayreuth, of course, being the very epicenter of Wagner's music. He was fascinated by Isolde's death and transformation in Wagner's opera Tristan und Isolde. In a nutshell, if Richard Strauss didn't have his own experiences to draw on, Wagner's operas were the perfect substitute. Before we go any further, mes petits amis, we should talk about tone poems, sometimes called symphonic poems. These are one-movement works which portray something extra-musical. Could be a poem, a painting, a short story, or a person. While the German composer Karl Löwe is said to have first coined the term in 1828, we can credit the Hungarian composer Franz Liszt with making the form popular. He left us with 13 tone poems, among them Hamlet, Les Préludes, Tasso, Lament and Triumph, and Prometheus. If we are looking for the source of Strauss's extra-musical inspiration for Death and Transfiguration, we need to look no further than Strauss himself. 4 years after the premiere of the piece, he wrote to his friend, the musicologist and writer Friedrich von Hausiger. It was 6 years ago, that by the way would be 1888 when the work was indeed composed, when the idea came to me to write a tone poem describing the last hours of a man who had striven for the highest ideals, presumably an artist. The sick man lies in his bed, breathing heavily and regularly in his sleep. Friendly dreams bring a smile to his face. His sleep grows lighter. He awakens. Fearful pains once more begin to torture him. Fever shakes his body. When the attack is over and the pain recedes, he recalls his past life. His childhood passes before his eyes. His youth with its strivings and passions. And then, when the pain returns, there appears to him the goal of his life's journey. The ideal which he attempted to embody in his art, but which he was unable to perfect, because such perfection could be achieved by no man. The fatal hour arrives. The soul leaves his body to discover the eternal cosmos, the magnificent realization of the ideal which could not be fulfilled here below. Once Strauss composed the tone poem, he asked his friend and mentor Alexander Ritter to flesh out the story and write a more poetical version of Strauss's story, which was included as program notes and also accompanied the published version of the score. We will use that as our guide. Like all well-behaved tone poems, the work is in one movement, but we have four sections. 1. Largo or slow. In a dark, shabby room, a man lies dying. The silence is disturbed only by the ticking of a clock, or is it the beating of the man's heart? A melancholy smile appears on the invalid's face. Is he dreaming of his happy childhood? Our room is dark indeed, and we definitely hear the man's heart. Based on the irregular rhythms, we should be concerned. The mood changes as we hear the harps, and then a nostalgic theme on flute, answered by oboe and then clarinet, as he thinks of happier times. After some more dark moments, the oboe and flute return with more nostalgic moments and a new theme which is even more tender. I can't resist playing you the solo violin version. It's so beautiful. The first section ends darkly as we leave the nostalgic contemplation of the past for the tragic reality of the present. Part 2, allegro, molto agitato, fast and very agitated. A furious struggle between life and death, at whose climax we hear briefly the theme of transfiguration that will dominate the final portion of the work. The struggle is unresolved and silence returns. Our tempo speeds up as our patient awakes and is fully aware of his situation. Our patient may be in pain, but he isn't going to go quietly into that good night. He struggles to defy mortality. It is through the most intense, searing pain that he glimpses the possibility of transfiguration, as Strauss introduces us to the transfiguration theme in the brass. Part 3. He sees his life again, the happy times, the ideal striven for as a young man, but the hammer blow of death rings out, his eyes are covered with eternal night. Our remembrance of youth begins with the themes we met in the first section. Listen here as Strauss transforms his youthful innocent theme into one of adolescent vigor. Now Strauss combines the man's nostalgic memories with the reality of his faulty heart. Once again, our subject defies his fate and refuses to go gently. And then, for the second time, he experiences the possibility of transfiguration, once again courtesy of some very Straussian brass. Here it is again. It's so good, who can resist? Having experienced transfiguration, there is a final battle with earthly forces. We hear a number of hammer blows, an upward scale, and with a stroke of the tam-tam, he expires. Part 4. The heavens open up to show him what the world denied him. Redemption. Transfiguration. The Transfiguration theme first played pianissimo by the full orchestra. Its flowering enriched by the celestial arpeggios of two harps. The theme climbs ever higher, dazzlingly, into the Empyrean. First we have silence, and then tremendous anticipation as the soul leaves the tormented body and rises upwards. then we experience true heavenly bliss. And finally, the purity of transfiguration. Listen as nostalgic youth is now beautifully blended with transformation. Finally, Strauss opens up the gates of heaven, and we enter. We end quietly, peacefully, reverently, and respectfully. Mes petits amis, there are so many things that are indeed great about Richard Strauss's Death and Transfiguration. One, Strauss was a man of the theater, and this is theater at its best. Cinematic decades before there was even cinema. Where would John Williams be without this music? Two, first-rate orchestration. Strauss, the conductor par excellence, knew how to use his orchestra effectively. Three, amazing thematic material. Tone poems use the technique of thematic transformation, which can only be as effective as your actual material. One of the problems with many of the tone poems of Franz Liszt is that we are listening to thematic transformations of themes which don't mean much to us. Not so Strauss. Every tune or motive used is memorable. Not everyone was a huge fan of Strauss's tone poems and what was called the music of the future. Ernest Newman, the English music critic, said of Death and Transfiguration, "It is too spectacular, too brilliantly lit, too full of pageantry, of a crowd, whereas this is a journey one must make very quietly and alone." I guess we all have a right to make our own arrangements for departing this life, and they are highly personal. Strauss was an extrovert, I am too for that matter, and this is his preferred scenario for leave-taking. As the saying goes, chacun son mort, or to each his own death. Postscript. 60 years after writing Death and Transfiguration, Strauss penned his final masterpiece and farewell to the world, his four last songs. The final song is entitled Im Abendrot, or At Gloaming. The last words of the song are Ist dies etwa der Tod? Is this perhaps death? For these final words, Strauss quotes the Transfiguration theme from Death and Transfiguration. A year later, in 1949, on his own deathbed, Strauss said to his daughter-in-law, "It's a funny thing, Alice. Dying is just the way I composed it in Death and Transfiguration." I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky, and this has been a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for Richard Strauss's Death and Transfiguration.